Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 FY26 earnings conference call for Rubicon Research, hosted by Motilal Oswal Financial Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Tushar Manudhane from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Sagar. On behalf of Motilal Oswal Financial Services, I welcome you all for 4Q FY26 results earnings call of Rubicon Research Limited. From the management side, we have Mr. Parag Sanchetti, CEO; Mr. Nitin Jajodia, CFO; Sagar Oak, Senior VP Corporate Development and Strategy. Over to you, sir, for the opening comments.
Hey, thanks, Tushar, and thanks to all the participants for taking out time to attend this earnings call. So I'll just start with the opening highlights for the quarter four. As we had mentioned in our earlier calls, we've seen a strong growth momentum. The revenue for Q4 FY26 was at 5,139 million, which was a year-on-year growth of 44%, and the EBITDA was at 1,213 million, again a growth of healthy growth of 67%, followed by a 111% increase in PAT year-on-year. If you see year-on-year, quarter-on-quarter, I think we've seen a strong growth trajectory. In the subsequent slides, I'll take some of the highlights on each side of the business, but I'll request Nitin to take us through the details of the profit and loss and the balance sheet.
Thanks, Parag. Hi, good evening, everyone. I'll take you through the key financial numbers for the quarter and for the year. So all the figures are in INR million. So on revenue front, our revenue for the quarter was 5,140 million rupees, growth of 44% on a YoY basis. Even sequentially, numbers grew by close to 8%. Gross profit was 3,330 million, growth of 39% on a YoY basis, and close to 7% growth versus sequentially. Our R&D expense for the quarter was 594 million versus 661 million in the previous year's Q4 and 523 million in the quarter three. So this R&D expense translates into 11.6% R&D for Q4 versus 10.1% same quarter previous year and 11% for the previous quarter. Our operating EBITDA for the quarter was 1,190 million versus 725 million in the same quarter previous year, a growth of 64%. EBITDA, including other income, was at 1,210 million, growth of 67% on a YoY basis. PBT for the quarter was 987 million, a growth of 93% on a YoY basis, and even sequential growth. PAT for the quarter was 768 million, a growth of 112% on a YoY basis, and also a sequential growth. On a full-year basis, our revenue for the financial year was 17,540 million, a healthy growth of 37%. Gross profit for the year was 11,660 million, a growth of 32%. Our R&D expense for the year was 1,935 million, 11% R&D versus 10.3% in the previous year. Our operating EBITDA for the year is 4,000 million versus 2,643 million in the previous year, a healthy growth of 52%. EBITDA, including other income, was at 4,080 million rupees, a growth of 52% versus previous year. PAT for the year was 2,467 million, a healthy growth of 84% versus previous financial year. Now moving on to the next slide on balance sheet. Our shareholders fund was 12,888 million, primarily driven by IPO proceeds during the year. Borrowings were at 2,594 million, reduction versus previous fund of payment of debt. Our fixed asset as on 31st March 26 was 5,736 million, increase versus previous year, primarily driven by acquisition of Pithampur facility and additional capex. Our net working capital was at 6,163 million, translating into a working capital days of 126 days versus 137 days of previous year. If you look at the working capital on the inventory, as we've been saying in our earlier earning call as well, for us, inventory is a fuel for growth, and this inventory needs to be seen in light of our strong growth trajectory. And despite this higher inventory, our ROIC improved to 36%. I would like to add one more point. This ROIC of 36% is after Pithampur acquisition of 149 crore, which is yet to be commercialized. Now moving on to the next slide on cash flow statement. Our net cash flow from operating activities for the quarter was 655 million. One point to be noted here, if you look at out of our total tax payout for the year, 501 million rupees was for this quarter. So despite this tax outflow, the net cash flow from operation was pretty healthy at 655 million. The cash flow for the entire year is at 2,050 million. Our cash flow in investing activities of 4,097 million is primarily driven by Pithampur acquisition, fixed deposit out of IPO proceeds, capex of 800 crore, and other inorganic outflow. So with this, I'll hand over to Parag. Sorry, on the previous slide, the capex was 800 million, not 800 crore.
Thanks, Nitin, for giving the summary of the financials. So just some commentary on the Q4 performance. So if you look at the revenue, I think it has, as we have mentioned in the earlier quarters, the strong trajectory of growth continues both in terms of revenue and EBITDA. If you look at the revenue, it is fairly broad-based from established products and new launches. And also from a concentration perspective, the top five products account for 39% of revenue, again in line with our previous quarters. And top 10 account for 57% of revenue, again clearly reflecting no concentration risk and in line with our earlier quarters. The pricing broadly has remained stable for us with the mix of the portfolio and the kind of products and the mix of specialty we've had, we have seen stability in the pricing. If you look at the coming quarters, we see a strong revenue visibility. So we continue to see the same growth momentum in the coming quarters. Coming to the next part of, I think, cash flow, as again, if you've seen over the previous quarters, we've had strong cash flow generation from operations, and that has continued in the same line in this quarter also. From an FDA approval standpoint, in complete FY 2026, we received 12 product approvals, and a new matrix, which is the number of products under filing, we have disclosed. This matrix of number of products which are under review with the FDA will be disclosing as we go ahead once a year. The current number stands at 24 products which are under FDA review, which again signals a very robust pipeline for growth as we move into the next year. And commercialization rate, which again is a validation of our portfolio selection and execution, is strong at 92% of the approved products, though the base of products has kept on increasing. If you look at the specialty portfolio, it contributed this quarter around 33% of the specialty of the gross profit for the quarter. The specialty portfolio is underpinned with a very strong pipeline, and that pipeline continues to grow, and we successfully launch various products on that. In line with what we have done, even as an unlisted company, the board has recommended a dividend of 150%, which amounts to 1.5 per share. That this amounts to a 10% payout ratio. We can move to the next slide. Coming to gross margins, I'll go into the specifics, but first I wanted to kind of give a philosophical understanding on how we look at gross margins and we look at CapEx, because those are correlated areas in the way we are looking at. So philosophically, our preference always been, and we'll continue to do that, is the CapEx is a lagging, we will only incur CapEx once we see a sustained or long-term demand coming through. We will never be in a situation where we are going to do CapEx and then look to fill it with revenues or fill it with demand. So if this is a philosophy we want to continue to follow as an organization. For when this happens, what we have seen, and we have seen in the last quarter also, I did mention that we had anticipated a certain demand, but we have been experiencing demand even higher than what we had envisaged. That means we don't want to lose the customer or the product sales. So we are ending up outsourcing more of our manufacturing in the short term to ensure that we are catering to this demand. In the long run, obviously, when we see this kind of sustained demand, we will go ahead and incur CapEx to ensure that we are able to get this produced internally and again, go back to or, improve our gross margins. So in light of that, we have seen a slight decline in gross margin, which is because of our own internal manufacturing constraint, and we had a increased reliance on the outsourced manufacturing. So now if you look at going ahead, the revenue traction as we stand, as I mentioned earlier, is looking very, very strong. So we do expect a greater reliance on outsourced manufacturing for at least a couple of more quarters. And we hope, and I'll give an update also on the Pithampur facility and it coming online. But as of now, at least we feel the sustained demand and increased demand, we will have to cater it through outsourced manufacturing. Coming to now, I think, Pithampur, it is on track as per our plan. We have already, the site has been qualified. We have done all the prerequisites which we need to do before the US FDA comes. We have even filed products, which ensures that we are now waiting for an inspection date from the FDA. So our initial indication that we were expecting a ramp up in Q1 of CY 27, calendar year 27, still stays intact. And obviously the gross margins, once we are able to get more internal manufacturing, will ensure that it's back on track. But having said that, I still want to reiterate that the EBITDA range would still remain in the 22%-23% range. So for the current quarter, it's at 23.1%, so which is risen slightly on a sequential basis. So this is, I think, broadly our commentary around gross margin, CapEx, and how do we see it going ahead. We can move to the next slide. Sagar, I request you to just take the audience through our R&D spends and the productivity and our thinking on how it's moving.
Sure. Thanks, Parag. Good evening, everyone. We spoke in the last quarterly call about how we look at R&D spends and the impact that they have on our revenue growth. As you can see, R&D expenses for Q4 were at about 11.6% of operating revenues. R&D spend for our business is a lead indicator of future revenue, and it's a metric that we have presented last quarter, and we wanted to present that as an update this quarter as well. Quick call out that in the last earnings call, we presented R&D productivity for the fiscal 2023-2026 period at 5.7x, which was based on an extrapolation of the 9 months fiscal 2026 revenue. We have now updated that with actuals, and that number has increased slightly to 5.9x. But just to recap the construct of R&D productivity in the way that we've laid it out, is that our growth is driven by our investments in building the pipeline, which flow through the P&L via the R&D spend. Considering our approach to ramping up revenues on a measured basis, we compared the revenues between over a three-year period. So to start with, fiscal 2024 versus fiscal 2021, where we had incremental revenue generated of 5,399 million. And if we look at the products that would have come into the commercial portfolio up to, say, in the incremental period, typically you would see R&D spend would have been incurred over a nine-quarters period from fiscal 2020, fiscal 2021, and first quarter of fiscal year 2022. So if we compare that R&D spend of 1.65 billion with the incremental revenue 3 years later of 5.4 billion, that's an R&D productivity multiple of 3.3x our R&D spend. And if we roll that forward to the next sort of block of 3 years, so if we compare fiscal 2025 versus fiscal 2022, where you had incremental revenues of 969 crores or 9.69 billion, as compared to nine quarters R&D spend of 2.38 billion-2,379 million, that's a 4.1x R&D productivity. And for the most recent three-year slot, which is FY 2026 over FY 2023, our revenue increase with the incremental revenue was 13.46 billion as against R&D spend of nine quarters of 2.26 billion. So that's a 5.9x multiple on that R&D spend. So this guides towards future growth. We had mentioned previously that for the nine quarters, FY 2026, FY 2027, and Q1 of FY 2028, our targeted expected R&D spend is 5 billion rupees, 500 crores. That remains sort of high confidence. We are on track to achieve the R&D spend guidance for this nine-quarter cycle. And coupled with R&D productivity, that provides strong visibility on our future growth. Parag, back to you.
Parag, sir.
So, quick update.
Hello.
On the... Yes, Parag.
Yeah, can you hear me? Sorry. I think one important update, and again, this is in line with building a strong organization, attracting the best talent. The board has approved a proposal to create an ESOP pool, which obviously is subject to shareholders' approval. So this definitely allows us, as we go towards the next growth stage of the company, to attract and also retain great talent within the company. Also, just to factor in the P&L impact of has been same factored in the EBITDA guidance. Sagar, you want to take the next slides?
Yes, Paul,
hello.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So moving on to the next slide, I'm on slide 13. And the acquisition of Arena Life Sciences is something that we announced a few weeks ago. And this is really an extension of our strategy to build a global therapeutics platform around particularly CNS and sort of chronic. We believe the Indian CNS market has room for growth, it's under-penetrated. It strengthens our core strategy of building around the CNS platform, and the India market entry is more than anything else an extension of our go-to markets. It's not a shift in geography. It's an additional market for our pipeline for us to monetize and drive returns on our R&D spending. What Arena provides us is a starting point on commercial infrastructure with over 4,000 prescribers, an established distribution network already in the market. It allows us faster penetration to bring our specialty products, drug device combinations into the market, avoid sort of the time and cost of building something from scratch. In terms of deal contours, this was an enterprise value of 200 crores on a cash and debt-free basis. We acquired an 85% stake in the company. We approximate the price per share, I think, is there's 158.53. The deal value was about 176 crores. And here we've partnered with Arena's founder, Mr. Vivek Seth, who continues as the managing director of the company with a very strong track record in the CNS space. He has over 30 years of experience. He's previously built a CNS franchise of over 600 crores in sales in the Indian market. So comes with, he and his team come with a wealth of experience. And for us, again, if you look at our M&A history, I think we are focused on M&A that focuses on capability and not just on building scale. So here again, while this is a growth bet, the economics, the size of investment are aligned with our sort of approach that centers around the ROC, where start out with a platform and then build on it. For the next few quarters, we intend to lay sort of the foundation of growth, set the growth trajectory for this business, and we are confident of beating IPM growth in fiscal year 2028. So we will work on sort of getting these growth drivers in place and then sort of start focusing also on driving profitability higher. So for the impact of these phases, at least has been factored into our EBITDA guidance that we have provided earlier. I'm moving now to the next slide. And I think what this really encapsulates is the approach that we bring with the combination of Rubicon and Arena, and how Arena gets repositioned as now a science-backed company. From previously where it was largely a sales and marketing company, I think the combined Rubicon Arena platform brings a meaningful offering to the Indian market in terms of robust pipeline, commercialization, knowledge and experience, differentiated products. And we hope to bring sort of investments to the table with Arena, which over the last few years they wouldn't have made by themselves. And some parallels, if I may draw to the way that we went about building our business in the U.S. when we entered last 10 years ago, we were a relatively small company in the U.S. market. Since then, I think our U.S. business has scaled up sizably, as we've noted there. Comparatively, I think as we enter the Indian market with Arena, we have a much larger, a more robust platform and balance sheet, synergistic therapy focus, very close alignment between the therapy focus of both entities. So that sort of summarizes on the Arena acquisition. And I think with that, we've reached the end of the quarterly presentation piece. I can hand it back to the moderator, and we can take up questions and answers.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and then one on their touch-tone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and then two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Again, to register for a question, please press star and one. Participants, you may press star and then one to ask a question. Your first question comes from Siddharth Negandhi with Chanakya Wealth Creation. Please go ahead. Siddharth, sir, your line is unmuted. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I had three questions. One, like-for-like, is it fair to assume that there have been two old products that have discontinued because you've received three approvals, but your portfolio of active products has increased quarter on quarter by one, and therefore I'm assuming there are two products, older ones or whatever, that have been discontinued? If you could give me an understanding of the like-for-like growth accounting for those two discontinued products, that's one. Second is, how should we think of your M&A strategy, right? Is it therapy forward or geography forward, given the Arena acquisition? How should we think of that? And the third question is, if you could give us an update on the fluticasone launch and on your market share for calendar year 2025. You have an FY 2025 update, but if you could give a calendar year 2025 update, that might be helpful. Thank you.
So hi, Siddharth. On your first question, we have discontinued one product. I don't know why you are getting two. And to answer your third question on fluticasone, as we stated in our earlier call as well, as an organization, we'll stay away from talking about any specific product. And as Parag mentioned in his statement, that our growth has been a broad-based growth. Our existing portfolio has grown, as well as the new launches have also grown. And yeah, so I'll keep it at that level.
And I'll take the question on M&A strategy, if I may. I think.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
To your point, Siddharth, yes, I think we are, as I said, the focus is on therapeutics. The focus is on sort of the therapy area. So earlier, Arena does is it adds a market to that focus. So I wouldn't say it is a shift in strategy. I think we continue to execute on that journey of CNS. And so it adds one more avenue to monetize our portfolio and pipeline. So yes, more therapeutic focus than geographic focus.
So just to add to what Sagar said, Siddharth, I think it's clearly where we are saying is it's a therapeutic focus,
which is there. And obviously, we feel India is one of the major growing markets from a CNS perspective. And hence, we have to decide in every market that what should be the go-to market. Do we go directly? Do we go via business partners? Do we tie up, do a joint venture? So here, since India is a major market, we definitely feel our direct presence will definitely help in building the business, and we want to definitely build it in a differentiated way. So having our own go-to market is very important for us.
Got it. And if you could give me an update on your market shares for calendar year 25, that would be helpful. And just to follow up on that M&A strategy, right? Now, given this, Arena, I mean, has an asset, right? 10 crores of EBIT on a 72 crore top line, 10 crore EBIT. If I look at it in terms of capital allocation, 10 crore EBIT on 200 crores of equity value, right? So roughly 5% ROCE for what you are doing, you know, nominally higher than that. And their own EBITDA margins seem to be somewhere in the range of 15%, which for a chronic company would tend to be on the lower side. So how should we think of, you know, the synergies and the margins on Arena and return ratios on Arena going forward?
So, Sagar, I'll just add one line. I think, Sagar, you have to see it again as we've done. If you see our history of M&A, right, we have done M&A from a strategic standpoint, right? So, where we can add value to the business and grow the business multifold times from where we take it from. So you should think for Arena as a platform which allows Rubicon to enter the CNS market, which is our therapeutic focus, and then grow the business from there. So those matrix, as Sagar mentioned in this presentation, have to be seen with what we do along with the business. And the second slide on Arena actually presented the same. Sagar, you want to add?
Yeah, thanks, Parag. And I think, absolutely. Just building on from what Parag said, I think, if you look at our M&A history, I think we've done a number of acquisitions where we've created a foothold, and then we have been able to add value to what it is that we acquired, whether it's Info Pharma Canada, which was coming out of bankruptcy when we bought it, and we've sort of turned that into the cornerstone of our nasal and inhalation products business. Or a manufacturing site that we acquired, 4 or 5 years ago, which was again underutilized and so on, and that today is significantly grown, expanded. And I think the approach has really been to get a little bit of a head start with getting that foothold or getting that cohort, and then building up on that. So I think earlier on what we said was that over the next few quarters we're going to be getting all of those growth essentials, growth ingredients in place. And I think that's really when you start seeing numbers getting meaningful. With respect to current Arena numbers, I don't think we have, I think their numbers are not yet published for last year. So.
Yeah, again, but Sagar, basically we are not looking at Arena current scale.
I was asking because you mentioned
revenue bottom line perspective. I think, as you rightly mentioned, it's a foothold in India for our CNS portfolio. So it's an additional GTM, additional market for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I go back, Siddharth, to your point on ROCE, I think going back to our very first acquisition, that was probably negative ROCE when we acquired it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for your responses. And sorry, I forgot, but congratulations on a great set of numbers and all the best for FY27.
Thank you. Thank you, Siddharth.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, if you wish to register for a question, you may press star and then one. The next question comes from Harsh Kundanani with Ionis Alpha. Please go ahead.
Hi, Parag and team. Congrats on great set of numbers. Just a couple of questions. Just to double click on the demand that you were talking about, Parag, is it driven in certain therapy area or is it across the board? And just back calculation suggests that in the last couple of quarters, a lot of the growth is coming from the top five products that we have. So anything to call out there? That's the first one. The second one is that once Pithampur is a large site, and how much time will it take to ramp up Pithampur, and once that kicks in, how should one look at gross margins?
Yeah. So Harsh, coming back to I think the question you asked, the first question sorry was on the. Sorry, can you just first lay down the first question again? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. On the demand side, you said that the demand is pretty strong.
Yeah, yeah,
so sure. Just wanted to understand.
Harsh, demand is been very broad based, and I don't think there's a single product or two products. We have seen a business across med products which have been in the market for a few years, and we have seen products demand for even products we have launched. So I can't say that, we are seeing it in certain therapy, are we looking at in certain areas or looking at recency effect of anyone launches. So that I can confirm to you that demand has been broad-based. Now, I think the second question you had was on, I think the percentage, if you just see the top five, I think this quarter is 39 versus the earlier quarters have been 34, 30, 35. So broadly, if you look at the top five, it's been in the same range of that, 30 to 40% range, which is there. So I didn't specifically understand that question. But again, to reconfirm, the demand has been quite broad-based across the portfolio. And the last question was on the Pithampur one. So regarding the Pithampur facility, I think it's a large facility, but also it has different capabilities. So the inspection which we have triggered is for the general block, which we have, I would say, enough demand to fill it up completely as we stand today. So we will go as per our plan, because from a quality and standpoint also we want to ramp it up carefully. So as soon as we get approval done, we have tech transferred enough products for them to start manufacturing those products and reach a decent capacity utilization within 12 to 18 months. And regarding the other capabilities, those also, other blocks which are there, we are working on those also. But the main block, which is a general block, we should see a decent capacity utilization in the next 12 to 18 months post the inspection.
Understood. This is helpful. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Prajay with Wealthy Wire. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Sir, you're sounding slightly muffled.
Okay. Is it better now?
This is slightly better, sir. But still, if you are using any other mode, may we request you use handset, please?
Just a second. Yeah, is it better now?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just wanted to understand that in the previous call, you had indicated that there was around 25-30% of inventory that was being laid down for some upcoming launches. So just want to understand how much of this inventory is tied to the product which we are going to expect in this coming 12 months, or versus for a longer period in this pipeline.
So on this, if you look at our inventory, okay, which has grown versus the previous year, and overall in the working capital of 127 days, inventory is slightly on a higher side. But as I mentioned, that this inventory needs to be seen in conjunction with our higher growth rate, which is a combination of growth in our existing product as well as expected new launches. As Parag mentioned, we have 24 products which are filed with US FDA under review, and these products will get launched in the, I would say, in the next one and a half year. So keeping that in mind, a fair share of inventory is towards new launches, which is a combination of whether finished goods, raw material, packing material, given the high lead time, etc.
And one more thing that like, I just want to understand that the top 5 and top 10 have been gradually getting concentrated on your product concentration. So is it because of some temporary launches that we are currently we are planning for, or like there are some products which have disproportionately grown?
So as we mentioned, our concentration of top 5 and top 10 product has been range bound, and there's no reliance on, I would say, any one or two product or one or two hero product.
Okay, but then this is a very, like, this gradual improvement is only just a temporary basis on, like, for some causes or for other reasons, right?
Yeah, I did not get your question. Your voice is not very clear.
Okay. Is it audible? Is it better now? Hello?
Yeah, it is better.
Okay. So I just want to understand that the increase, the spike that has happened, though it's in the range itself, just want to understand that whether it is like just it on a temporary basis there has been a spike, or it's like in future so it can be in the similar range. Like it can go to 39%.
So we are seeing that this 35-39% is a certain range. So this top 5-10 product will be in that range only.
So just to reiterate what Nitin is saying, if you say it's 35, then it went to 30, then 34. So it's you can't pin it down, and because also this is done at a point of time. So exactly, so it's been in that, we, as I said, it will be in a range bound way.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Nishant Maheshwari with Grow Wealth. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes.
So first of all, congratulations for the fantastic set of numbers. My question is related with the R&D point. How much projected R&D are we allocating in terms of scale this year? And what will be the bifurcation of this R&D with the various segments, the different lines of medicines where the company is operating, like, for example, digestive or, say, other line, painkillers or something like. So is there any bifurcation for this R&D, bifurcation for this R&D?
Nishant, thanks for the question. I think as we said, we guided an R&D spend of 5 billion or 500 crores, which is over the 9 quarters of fiscal 26 plus 27 and Q1 of 28. If you see, we have in fiscal 26, our R&D spend was just under 194 crores, so 1935 million. So I think for the remaining 5 quarters, you can take the remaining sort of, you know, 300+ crores. And again, as I said, fairly high confidence of getting to those numbers. In terms of a breakout of the pipeline of the spend, Nishant, we don't provide that. We don't, as we had said earlier, we stop short of talking about the pipeline in detail.
And just to add to that, if you also look at the slide number 17 on the company overview, how as an organization our portfolio is evolving towards specialty drug device combination, and that has also resulted into our R&D productivity growing. So directionally, our quality of R&D work, and I would say the portfolio selection is moving in that direction, and that's why R&D productivity is where it is today. Apart from this, the therapy-wise or further breakup of R&D, we'll not be able to share. And that's not the way we also track internally.
And just to add to what Nitin said, right? I mean, if you look at the color of the portfolio, the color of the book, and if you go back to FY, you know, 21, 22, versus that, you know, moving to 24, 25, 26, I think, Nishant, what's fundamentally changed is the color of the book or the quality of the portfolio and pipeline.
That is one thing which we got fascinated with the company. I mean, hello?
Thank you for that.
Sir, one last question. When we are looking into the books of accounts, we are seeing that the company is able to manage its cost of material consumed. But after this all Israel and Iran war, so the cost of purchase, I mean, the purchase material costs have increased, I mean, not significantly, but there is an increase in the cost. So whether it is due to the shortage of material, which resulted in this increase in the cost, and in the current quarter, do we see the same thing repeating again, and it will be costing in our portfolio since we are outsourcing the material?
So
yeah, that's good.
So Nishant, as we've explained that our gross margin has been primarily driven by higher reliance on the outsourced manufacturing. And as far as your point around the impact of war is concerned, what we like to iterate that in the current
in general, every prices have increased. I mean, everywhere we have seen there has been an increase in price, whether there is API or intermediate material, everything has increased. So it must be on our books also. It might be, I mean, on small percentage-wise or a large percentage-wise, we don't know about that. But there must be an impact on our material procurement cost.
Yes. So Nishant, I think just a simple two-line answer would be yes. Obviously, the costs have gone up because crude oil is a very basic commodity across board. But I just want to reiterate that we maintain our EBITDA guidance of 22%-23% even for the coming quarters.
Okay. So that means we will pass on the cost to the extent, or we will maintain this EBITDA, I mean.
We'll maintain the EBITDA. Let's keep it that way, you know.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Ritika with ValueQuest. Please go ahead.
I have a few questions. Firstly, out of these pending filings of 24 products under review, could you give us some color on what kind of complexity are these for in terms of what part of these drugs are probably NDA, 505B2 or nasal, which you mentioned also increasingly R&D is going into all of these. So I know you don't comment product specific, but any broad color would be very helpful.
So Ritika, I think so again, the first statement we would give is we don't comment on product specific therapy focus, all that. But considering what Nitin said, you know, we've been focusing on different areas and those areas get reflected into the filings we do. So if you look at specialty, you look at drug device combinations, you look at other products, they all are factored in the filings will be kind of representative of that.
Sure. Also, Pritampur, up till now, how many filings would we have done for that facility?
So, Ritika, we don't specifically comment, but as I mentioned that now we are waiting inspection. So, filing has been done from a FDA standpoint to come and visit our site. So, again, we don't want to guide any number, you know, what number of, but having said that, I've also to earlier question mentioned that we would reach a decent capacity utilization post the inspection within 12 to 18 months.
Sure. Last question would be what is our CAPEX guidance for the next 2 years?
So on the CAPEX guidance, Ritika, I put it in two parts. One is that for the next couple of years, we are projecting a capex of close to 300 crore across various sites. And also linking to your previous question on the Pithampur, that facility, as Parag mentioned, will get ramped up in the coming year. So with this, I think we'll have enough capacity to take care of the strong demand which we are seeing for the next few years. And second part, while I have given you numbers, on the second part, Ritika, as we've stated in our business, R&D investment and R&D productivity is a lead indicator of growth versus CapEx. And also reiterating what Parag mentioned, our philosophy as an organization wherein our preference is to have CapEx lagging the demand versus CapEx leading demand. So that philosophy and that operating principle will continue.
Sure. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Tushar Manudhani. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So first, again on R&D productivity, with number going to almost 5.9 for FY26, and which has scaled up as highlighted in the opening remarks. But is it like safe to assume that at least we'll be able to make it up to 5 plus sort of a productivity for the subsequent R&D spend?
Tushar, I think that would be 5 and 5 plus would be a fair assumption. Obviously, our endeavor is to keep on, improving, and the kind of portfolio shift which we are seeing or the investments we are making, definitely we feel confident that we'll be beating that. But yeah, from an assumption perspective, that could be a good point to consider.
Got it, sir. And secondly, on the net working capital days, while the inventory buildup is considering the subsequent demand for the product, but still the overall net working capitals have been very efficiently managed and reduced to 126. Trying to understand subsequently in terms of the demand for the products, how much further scope to reduce the net working capital days, or like this is the sort of range which one should you know think of?
So Tushar, I would say that this is the kind of range you can assume.
Got it, sir. And just lastly, from the compliance perspective, like given the strong track record from the USFDA compliance perspective, and at the same time, Pithampur site when it was acquired was at you know sort of already compliant. Any sort of learnings you would like to share where sort of from the Pithampur site you would have implemented at the existing sites, or from existing sites you would have implemented at Pithampur sites?
So Tushar, the reverse was not possible because Pithampur was not a operational site. Means there were very few people and they were not producing anything. So there was no crossway we could have learned anything from there. I think from our own site's perspective, we keep on imparting the best practices across. We keep on taking the best practices and moving it to the sites. So this is what we have even continued in case of Pithampur. The most important aspect, Tushar, is to build a culture right from the start. And that's again, which was a great thing in Pithampur, that we were almost recruiting or we were building the team as per the culture we want and setting up the systems as, you know, we have used in our other sites. So we continue to do that across the sites we either build it or we acquire. Even in this quarter, which we had disclosed to the stock exchange, I want to reiterate, we had a surprise inspection at our Canadian facility, and that inspection went without any observations. So again, it highlights the compliance culture or the quality culture we have built within the system.
Great, sir. I mean, building a compliance culture at a greenfield facility is one aspect, but consistently building up the site to bring it up to USFDA compliance, the Satara site and now Pithampur, so that's really a commendable task. So that's on the compliance side. Just lastly, as far as EBITDA margin guidance is considered, while considering the comments in the earlier Q&A, so just to sort of clarification, EBITDA margin guidance is considering the ESOP expenses, arena related expenses, Pithampur related expenses, as well as whatever the raw material logistics cost escalation that can come up due to the global political turmoil. Is that the safe assumption to make?
Yes, Tushar. You're right.
Yes. Except, Tushar, any black swan event which we can't predict.
Sure, sir. That's really helpful. Thanks a lot for addressing my questions.
Thanks, Tushar.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take the last question from the line of Bhavesh Bhatia, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good evening, team. Thank you for the opportunity and firstly, congratulations on a great set of results. So my question is related to the finance cost. So you raised around 310 crores through the IPO and utilized around 265 crores up to March 31st, 2026. But I can see that there is a sequential increase in the finance cost. So what is the reason? Could you throw some light on this?
Yes, Bhavesh. So this sequential increase in finance cost, I think one is that while we've raised IPO proceeds and then we have repaid a few of our debt, but still some debts are to be repaid. And the other thing is this finance cost also includes the cost on account of our factoring, receivable factoring, and even at our current level, our US receivable are at a, I would say, healthy level, and then our factoring is pretty much under control, and then whatever receivable can be factored, I think we factored 1/3 of that.
Okay, so going forward, will there be a reduction in the finance cost, or because I can see that you have an unutilized amount of 45 crores, so I believe that you will be utilizing it for a debt repayment, so the interest cost should come down in the upcoming quarters, am I right?
Yeah, but also recently this Arena acquisition, even that acquisition has been partly funded through debt, so finance cost may not come down.
Okay. So, but for inorganic acquisition, so you had raised close to around 161 crores and you still have an unutilized amount of 100 crores. So I believe that this 100 crore will be utilized for the Arena acquisition, and plus you have another 75 crore of debt for the acquisition, right?
So also as I mentioned, partly we have the Arena acquisition, partly we funded through debt, partly through this IPO proceeds. At the same time, we are also keeping a war chest for any interesting inorganic opportunity. As we had stated in our RHP strategy document.
Okay, so have you identified any other companies, any other acquisitions to be made in FY27?
So we can't comment on that. I think at an appropriate time when we've got to that level of certainty on any transaction, we would make the necessary intimations. But I wouldn't comment on that right now.
Understood. That was helpful. That's it from my side, and all the best for the future quarters. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Hey, thank you everyone for joining the conference call. Happy for the active participation by everyone who was involved in asking questions. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Motilal Oswal Financial Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you everyone for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.